It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 101 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
So we just finished a really fun weekend live streaming the Minnesota X-Wing Regional Championship at the Fantasy Flight Game Center in Roseville, Minnesota, and we are actually pretty tired.
Right, but we got to keep bringing you content, so here we go.
Today we're going to be talking about the results from that tournament. We're going to be looking at some of the top finishing lists, and we're also going to talk a little bit about the recent FAQ changes, which were in full effect at this tournament.
Right, and the FAQ does dictate some of the results, so let's start with there.
Yeah, so let's get to it. So there was some pretty substantial X-Wing news coming out last weekend. We did our 100th episode, so our focus was on that at the time, but last Monday, Fantasy Flight dropped a new FAQ and errata update. That changed some pretty substantial things in the competitive game.
Right, and we kind of got a tease of what that FAQ would be on Friday before the FAQ dropped, just with the Fantasy Flight Game Center making a statement that Trajectory Simulator and Genius could not work in unison.
Yeah, and then this was firmly established in the rules when the FAQ actually did drop on Monday. So that was a pretty big change here, and it definitely had an effect here on what people were bringing to this tournament. So Fantasy Flight provided us in the FAQ a rules clarification for Trajectory Simulator. It says, Trajectory Simulator can be used only when the ship would drop a bomb via the means printed on an equipped bomb upgrade card. It cannot be used while using Genius to drop a bomb after performing a maneuver, or in conjunction with any other effects that override the manner in which a bomb is dropped, such as Crimson Specialist.
Right, and so sometimes Fantasy Flight has come up with pretty elegant solutions to change powerful mechanics. This is not one of them.
It's a little rough around the edges. Yeah, we've seen things develop over time. Carson and I were talking before the show about some of the ways the rules have been adapted to fix with kind of broken mechanics. In previous rules adjustments, we've seen things like an added timing chart to help clarify and determine when abilities would trigger.
Yeah, so if you're reading the cards of Genius and Trajectory Simulator, there's not really a great argument for why it doesn't work, except that it's not fun. And now the FAQ says, just don't do it. They couldn't really come up with a good reason, but I'm glad it's changed.
Yeah, I think this was definitely a case where Fantasy Flight saw something that was really problematic in the game. This is a really oppressive combination where being able to launch those bombs after you perform a maneuver with Genius meant that you had so many options with your often pilot skill 10 NIM to just see where your opponent's going to go and then decide where you're going to drop that bomb. And it made it almost unavoidable.
Definitely way too powerful. Glad it's changed. And I'm glad we got a pretty rapid response from Fantasy Flight. This was pretty quickly during the regional season apparent that it was a problem. For a few weeks there, Miranda NIMs were just dominating the cut at big events. And so it was good to see a pretty rapid turnaround in getting an FAQ out. I still think we should be getting FAQs on release of product, but I guess we're only a few months behind now.
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem here is we've gotten so used to really delayed responses with these FAQ updates that now we've seen one turn around relatively quick. It's easy to forget that. I think really we should have these clarifications when these products are launched. Like right from the get-go, we should have had clarifications on when that harpoon condition was going to trigger, because that's now been out since October, and we just now got clarification on that.
Turns out initiative doesn't matter. Twin laser turrets can trigger it. Ion cannon can trigger it. Tractor beam cannon can trigger it.
So we got some clarification on the harpoon condition. What the FAQ document says, when an attack hits a ship after compare results before deal damage with the harpoon condition and has one or more uncancelled critical results, the condition resolves at that time. Note that this occurs even if those crit results are subsequently cancelled, as in the case of twin laser turret, ion cannon, jamming beam, etc., but not if the crit result are altered or removed at an earlier step, such as by heavy laser cannon's effect. So that's a lot of text there and a lot of clarification. So we're going to just break this down for you real quick.
All right, Tim. So I am attacking a Miranda Donnie with an ion cannon turret after she has previously been hit by a harpoon missile and has the harpoon condition on her. I roll two hits and a crit. You get one evade. What happens?
So at this point, we get to step 6 in the timing chart, the compare results step. We would compare those results, canceling out one of the hits with that evade result, leaving just a hit result and a crit result. Now, before we move on to the deal damage step, we would see that the attack is hit, and since there is an uncanceled critical result, we would trigger the harpoon condition on Miranda. After that resolves, we would move down to the deal damage step, at which point Ion Cannon's effect of canceling all the remaining hit and crit results and dealing one damage would occur. So even though that crit result gets canceled in the deal damage step, the harpoon condition occurs right before that between the compare results step and the deal damage step.
All right, that makes sense. But if I have Prince Xizor, I can still avoid a harpoon condition, right? By passing that crit away?
Unfortunately, we also got clarification specifically on Prince Xizor, and the way this works now is Xizor's ability to pass a hit or crit onto a friendly ship at range 1 would occur during step 7, and since we're checking for the harpoon condition at between step 6 and step 7, Xizor unfortunately cannot avoid getting that harpoon condition by passing off that crit.
They keep finding ways to make the top Star Viper pilot just the worst. He's the Fel's Wrath of the scum team.
I don't know if he's as great as Fel's Wrath.
Well, we'll see.
So overall, we're looking at some pretty substantial changes here. Trajectory Simulator, notable. I think it's a very good thing that we're seeing this change, and we're seeing it relatively quick. Hopefully, like we're saying, from now on, we'll start to get FAQs right when the products launch. But I'm really glad that we saw this responded to relatively quickly so it can get addressed for the upcoming regionals here. I'm not such a big fan of effectively adding even more slots onto the timing chart, because now we have effectively a step 6.5, I guess, right? There's a space between compare results and deal damage where abilities can trigger. And that's kind of problematic long-term if we keep seeing new abilities and new effects that have to like have their own specified window within the timing chart for when they occur.
Right. They should all just be start of combat, and we'll figure it out by initiative. And everyone will have to bid to the bottom.
Carson's voting.
It'll be great fun. That's my favorite part of the game, is who gets to control the start of combat triggers.
So your ideal X-Wing is everything, every ability triggers at start of combat, and it's all determined by initiative, what order it happens in.
Yeah.
All right, that's
so
that
it's a fun
terrible.
Game. I'll play it by myself.
Hey, Radio TCX listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. Carson and I realized that we had never announced raffle prizes for next month, so I guess now is as good a time as any. To be eligible for this raffle, you need to become a patron of Radio TCX by the end of the month, which means the day this episode posts is your last chance to be eligible for our raffle in February. The prizes are pretty simple this month, but cool. We're going to have 2 raffle winners. Each will be able to choose an X-Wing expansion valued at $30 or less, and we'll send that out to you. It does have to be one that's currently available and in print, just so we're able to purchase it. But yeah, we'll have 2 raffle winners there. If you want to become a supporter of the show, go to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a backer at any level. We really appreciate it. Special shout out to Radio TCX patron Wes Cargill, who was very kind and sent us some sweet new return address labels. They look really great and much better than the ones I was currently using. So thank you so much, Wes, for doing that. That was very kind of you. Carson and I really appreciate it. Well, now back to the cast. So now it's time to talk about the 2018 Minnesota X-Wing Regional. We have to start, of course, by congratulating our new regional champion, Will Hegwood, who took the championship from Minnesota, bringing it home for Chicago there.
Yeah, sadly, Gold Squadron was on top here. Will defeated Alex Smittle in our final table. Really funny game. A lot of crazy moments happened. We captured that all on stream, so be sure to check that out in our archive footage.
Yeah, you can get that actually right now for the next 2 weeks or so on Twitch. So you go to twitch.tv/radiotcx and you can find an archive. That last game was pretty chaotic there. We were having trouble tracking damage because it was moving so quick through the combat phases there.
Miranda is so hard to track on stream. She's getting shields back. She's taking them off when things aren't shooting at her. And there's so many different upgrades. She can roll different attack dice and then change how many attack dice she rolls. You never know what she's doing. We had to run back and forth and make sure we got accurate shield counts all the time. But it was a crazy match. Both players flew very well, and Will came out on top and is our new Minnesota regional champion.
Huge congratulations to Will there for becoming the new Minnesota regional champion. We did see some good representation, though, from Minnesota in that top cut, which is thankful this is a tournament happening in our home state here. We had two players in the top four, which was awesome. Andy Myers made it, though he lost out to Alex Smittle.
Yeah, I mean, Andy was flying a Hawk, Torkelmux, man after my own heart. Went undefeated in Swiss and made it all the way to top four. So great run. Congratulations, Andy.
We also had the defending regional champion make it to top four, Andrew LaTurelle, who ended up losing out to Will in that top four game.
Yeah, and Andrew was actually flying the same ships he flew last year, defending the title with the same ships. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, shout out to those guys and shout out to all the Minnesota players who were in that top 16 cut. It's good that we actually had some Minnesota players make the cut. Otherwise, that would have been real embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, we had 140 players there. The event went pretty smoothly. And it was just great to see everyone. Streaming was always a lot of fun. So thank you if you joined us in the chat there. Or thank you if you stopped by to say hello while you're at the event. It was great meeting everyone.
Yeah, looking real quick at the top 16 there. If you want to see the full top 16 list, you can be sure to check those out on List Juggler. But we saw half the lists in the top 16 were Rebel lists. People using the power of Miranda and Poe Dameron there. Spread out all across these lists here. Then we had four Scum lists and four Imperial lists.
Yeah, and honestly, about half of the Swiss, or like 40-some percent, was Rebels. So they're pretty strong right now. They're showing up pretty well in the cut. And we had a Rebel champion as well. So doing well all the way through the tournament.
Looking at the recent rules changes there with Trajectory Simulator, we did only see three Nim Miranda lists make this top 16 cut. And two of them ended up facing each other in the top 16 rounds. So one of them got eliminated there right off the bat.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them got paired during Swiss as well. The list is still very strong. It's not crazy busted strong like Genius Launching was. But, I mean, Miranda Donnie is still just so good. And Nim is not bad either.
Yeah, Miranda is still really strong right now. Obviously, we saw Miranda in Will's winning list here. But it's just such a strong late-game ship. Twin laser turrets as strong as ever. Access to harpoon missiles is pretty great, too. That's definitely a ship I expect to see in prominence for the rest of the regional season and going into system opens here.
Yeah, so let's actually get into Will's list. It's got a lot of good stuff there. It, of course, starts off with Miranda Donnie. Great first choice if you're playing Rebels. Actually, just a great first choice in general. Can't really go wrong there. Miranda Donnie has the twin laser turret, the harpoon missile upgrade, long-range scanners, bomblet generator, and C-3PO as the crew choice. Yeah, so that C-3PO crew there, very powerful. That was the tech that allowed him to beat other Mirandas. Just getting some evade results makes you much more resilient to the return twin laser turret fire. Even gives you a chance to avoid twin laser turret shot that hits two results. And just gives you general survivability to make sure Miranda makes it to the late game.
Well, and we know Miranda's a great late-game ship, and C-3PO just makes her that much better. Having the regen ability there with Miranda Donnie and that twin laser turret's already strong, being able to just lose a die out on one of your twin laser turret attacks when you regen, and then adding C-3PO onto that defense ability, it helps a little bit against twin laser turret, but it helps a lot against just the basic three-dice attacks that you're seeing all over the place from ships like the Inquisitor, where you're just going to mitigate that damage, bring it down so low, and then regenerate it back really quickly, makes this ship really hard to kill if you're just facing off against it 1v1.
Is Miranda not the best late game ship? You said she was great, but I think she's just the best, right? Is there any other ship you would rather have 1v1?
Well, given her versatility there, access to harpoon missiles and bomblet generator, she's probably the best closing ship you can get right now.
Yeah, she's got high damage output, diverse damage threat, survivability, regeneration, mobility, and probably more points than the opposing ship.
Yeah, and even this version feels kind of stripped down compared to some of the other Miranda Donnies you see out there with things like extra munitions. You also are losing out on the Sabine Wren here, so you're not getting that guaranteed bomb damage from your bomblet generator, but obviously that didn't impede Will here when he took the championship.
Will finishes the list with Lorik. Of course, helps keep your Miranda alive, got to protect the investment. Lorik has Tactician, Selflessness, and Ray. Selflessness, of course, pairs great with Lorik. Really makes any of the other ships pretty bad targets. You got to chew through Lorik first, who's got that reinforced token, which is pretty hard to beat. And then he's got that Tactician for some control and Ray to boost up Lorik's damage output.
Well, I really like Ray here, too. Obviously, being able to stockpile focus tokens is strong. Ray's a very strong crew card at a really low point cost. It also puts a lot of pressure on your opponent to make decisions quickly. The longer your opponent waits to engage, the more focus tokens you're going to stockpile with Ray, and the more defensible and offensive your list is going to be, thanks to Lowrick having access to those focus tokens.
And the final ship, Ezra Bridger in the Sheathipede class shuttle. Ezra's got Snapshot, R3A2, the Harrison Dula crew, and then the Phantom 2 title just for fun. This Ezra was awesome. We had it on stream a few times, and there was one game where it got blown up pretty quickly. We didn't see it do much, but when it stuck around, it was definitely the MVP of the match.
Well, and it was probably wise to try and blow this thing up quickly, because it can become very problematic for anybody flying against it. I'll admit, when I first saw this card, I was pretty skeptical of how effective Ezra Bridger would be, but with the combination of R3A2 and Harrison Dula here, it's really proved its worth. The key synergy being here, you can throw that Ezra out front. A lot of times with these Sheathipede stress units, people have been kind of running them behind the list there so they don't get targeted and destroyed immediately. But with Snapshot and R3A2, you're actually pretty aggressive, and Will was very aggressive with his Ezra, putting him in uncomfortable places for his opponent where they would quickly move into range. He would be able to trigger that Snapshot if they moved into range one in his front firing arc. He would trigger R3A2 on that Snapshot shot to take a stress and deal a stress, and then follow it up with an additional stress when he fired his normal primary weapon.
The ability to deal two stress in a turn is not unique for a Rebel ship. We've seen R3A2 ships do that for quite a while now. The Snapshot thing is a little unique, being able to do it in the activation phase, and so denying people actions early. But what makes the Ezra Bridger shuttle stand out here is actually just Ezra's pilot ability. While stress getting those focuses turned into evade results, a lot of people wanted to burn this ship down, and a lot of people tried. But that pilot ability kept that ship alive. Getting two evade results and then adding an evade with Lowrick's ability made this shuttle really difficult to burn down. And a lot of people tried and hardly did any damage to it. And then you have Will's full force dealing damage to you, and that's not a good mix.
Yeah, the defensibility here is huge. I'd even see Will often stressing Ezra out early on before he engaged, just to make sure he could trigger that pilot ability when it became time to engage. We also have the Harrison Dula crew here, which is actually a really great crew card, allows you to perform red maneuvers while you're stressed, and this actually helps out Ezra a lot. Ezra now has access to those 3K turns even while he's stressed, allowing him to flip around and continue to put pressure on his opponents with that Snapshot upgrade card and the R3A2 there. Really, this list, I think at the heart of it, it doesn't have a good first target, even if you're coming in with some heavy alpha strikes here. None of these ships are particularly desirable to shoot at. If you shoot at Miranda or Ezra, you've got Lowrick backing them up there either with selflessness and or that reinforced token he can spend to add an evade. And if you target Lowrick, that's a lot of hit points you have to chew through pretty fast. And you're going to get followed up by some shots with R3A2 dealing stress and Miranda dealing a bunch of damage with either twin laser turret or harpoon missile.
Right. I mean, so Lowrick is, I guess, the easiest ship to kill there. It's not easy by any means, but it's the easiest of the three. And that means you're leaving both the two threats still on the board. The stress control is going to have you pretty heavily locked at that point by the time you finish Lowrick. And Lowrick's dealing out stress along the way as well. So it really piles up, the combination of Ezra Bridger plus Lowrick. And then, of course, you have the late game closeout power of Miranda Donnie. So really powerful list. Not a lot of weaknesses there.
And Will was on several of our stream games, so I'm definitely going to recommend you check out the archive there to see exactly how he was flying this list. It was quite masterfully done, so kudos to Will for flying it so well, and well enough to become the Minnesota Regional Champion. In general, you know, looking at the top 16 here, Carson, I did like there was a fair bit of diversity, I felt, actually. We saw a decent number of ships here, more so than we've seen a lot recently, especially in the Nim Miranda age. I liked seeing that we had Poe in there. We had a couple Dash Rendars, still several Asajjs. It's a great ship.
Yeah, actually, so, I mean, Miranda and Nim were the most popular ship choices in the cut. Part of that's because we did still have three Miranda and Nim players make the cut. But after that, the most popular ships were either Asajj or the Inquisitor. And so Asajj, I mean, we had three pretty different Asajj lists. She really doesn't have quite the perfect partner right now. Losing her Atani Mindlink squad mates hurt Asajj a bit. I mean, you could still try it out. I've definitely messed around with it, but it's just not quite where it once was, which is probably a good thing. But the Scum faction right now, pretty underrepresented. But right now, Asajj seems to be what's carrying them.
Well, yeah, and I mean, looking at the top 16 here, among the three Asajj lists we saw, they were very different. We had an Asajj paired up with Torkoal Mux and a Syndicate Thug. That was top four, flown by Andy Myers. We also saw an Asajj in the top eight with Dengar, and we saw one in the top 16 there with Boba Fett.
Yeah, and then looking at the Empire, most popular ship was the Inquisitor, which I was pretty surprised by. But all of our Inquisitor lists were also paired with Emperor Palpatine. So I guess the Inquisitor just seems to be the ideal ship to pair with Palpatine. I would have thought four hit points, not where you want to be when bombs are abound, which they definitely still were despite changes to Genius and Trajectory Simulator. But I guess the Inquisitor just has the repositioning to survive and dodge those bombs, and does definitely have the defensive modification ability to avoid harpoon missiles.
Yeah, two of our top 16 lists had the Inquisitor with Quick Draw and an Emperor Palpatine shuttle, including our second-place finisher, Alex Smittle. We also saw the Inquisitor in Andrew LaTourelle's list in the top four, paired up with a Rear Admiral Chirinau. And there was a lot of other cool stuff in that top 16. We saw two Glaive Squadrons with Colonel Vessery. We saw four contracted scouts with Trickshot and Courier Droid. So 25-point base model contracted scout with 2 0-point upgrades. That was pretty funny list to make it to the top 16 there. If you're looking for ideas for what to fly in an upcoming regional or tournament, I would definitely recommend checking out these top 16 lists. We'll try to include a link with our post on our Facebook page here for this episode so you can get a direct look there.
Yeah, and all of these players, I mean, it was 140-player regional. All these players had to at least go 5-1 in Swiss and have pretty strong MOV to make the cut. So these are all pretty good lists that made it through a pretty tough field. And a lot of these games are also on our stream. So if you see a list on there that you like and want to try out, I would recommend going and looking back at our streamed games and seeing how these great players flew the lists.
Overall, though, it was a really great tournament. 140 players, two-day event. We've got some shout-outs. Definitely want to shout-out Kyle Decker, who is the marshal for this tournament. He also runs the Fantasy Flight Game Center. He did a fantastic job of keeping things organized, and I think the whole tournament went very smoothly.
Got a shout-out to judges Robert Myman and Matt Stoutenberg. Did an excellent job. Also, shout-out to Tim, who typed furiously, entering the lists into the HTML files so we could see them up on the stream.
And I guess I'll give you a shout-out, too, Carson, for paying attention to the game and explaining to me what was going on. That was very helpful.
Sure. You did all the work.
Thank you to anyone who introduced themselves. We met a couple listeners while we were at the event, and that's always a great thing. If you do see us at an event, we're usually in our trademark red bowling shirts. Be sure to say hi, and we'd love to talk to you guys.
You knock the shirts, but you love them.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go onto facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page. And while you're there, you can actually leave a review on Facebook. So go ahead and give us that 5-star review and say what you like about the show. It's really been great to see a bunch of 5-star reviews on there, so we'd love to see more.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go into iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show. It's a great way for us to reach a wider audience. People do read those reviews, and they like to see the 5-star ratings for the podcast. So we really appreciate everyone who's left us a 5-star review.
This week, we want to give a shout-out to Jay Keefe, who left us a 5-star review saying that the show did a great job keeping everything succinct and snappy and without feeling rushed. Thanks, Jay Keefe.
And again, a huge thank you to everyone who's already left us a 5-star review.
If you want to support the show directly and help fund things like us doing the live stream for regional events, you can support the show directly by going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.